brought to you by Think Tank.
You know, around this time of year, when the weather drops, we just see people die. You know, we do. That's something that I don't think anybody, you know, I haven't been in this job as long as some of my peers, but that's something I don't think anybody who's been in the job for 12, 15, 20 years ever really is able to deal with. It's hard not to wonder what you can do, what you could have done differently when that happens.
There are an estimated 158 people sleeping rough on the streets of Wales, according to the Welsh Government. This number could be higher, as homeless charity Shelter Cymru have said the count method is inadequate and outdated. The city of Cardiff has the highest number of rough sleepers, with an estimated 64 sleeping on the street. The number of households threatened with statutory homelessness in Wales was 9,072 from 2017 to 18, so this number could rise. I'm Harry Bly, you're listening to Think Tank Investigates, Cardiff's homeless crisis. Welcome to a special edition of Think Tank. This is a documentary about homelessness in Cardiff, exposing the problems facing this city and others across the UK, and exhibiting some of the work being done by organisations and citizens to raise awareness and help those sleeping rough. In this episode, I'll be talking to a man who once lived on the streets, but now works with a charity helping people in his situation rebuild their lives. Along the way, I talked to someone who currently lives on the streets, awaiting council accommodation after 9 years of waiting. And I look at a new approach to raising awareness, joining students from Cardiff University on the student sleepout. I'll be looking at some of the issues adding a level of complexity to this crisis, including a surge of organised crime and legal highs. Cardiff is the capital city of Wales. It's been my home for the last 5 years. I've seen the rise in rough sleepers on our streets. Alongside my co-producer Tanya, I want to give a platform to those who've lived on the streets and those trying to help the cause. The main speaker in this documentary is Thomas. Not his real name, we are protecting his identity. He spent over a year and a half homeless and now works alongside a charity, helping those sleeping rough and facing the challenges he knows all too well.
Okay, so in your own time, would you like to just tell me a little bit about what it's like to be homeless, what it's like to be on the streets?
Well, I can only speak for... Well, no, I can't just speak for my own personal experience, but for my personal experience, the main thing I felt was a deep sense of isolation. And I think that you see that with other people that I've interacted with in my line of work and just personally. Not necessarily complete isolation, but certainly isolation from society. You're often treated like you're outside of it, and at best you're usually ignored. And while that might not be everybody that's interacting with you, it's such a prominent thing to have everybody walk past you, to have everybody just not acknowledge your existence, that it really weighs down heavily every single day. And maybe that's part down to my personality and the way that I saw everybody around me. But that was the main crushing thing for me, was just feeling like I wasn't a part of society. So anything illegal or normally immoral, when it came to preserving myself, I felt fine with it because I felt like I wasn't a part of that society. They didn't want me. I didn't have to abide by their rules because they weren't going to do anything for me. So that kind of kept me where I was, because you get in trouble with, you know, you get in trouble with police and CSOs, and you'd get in trouble for drugs. You're kicked out of the places that were putting you up, and the entire time you felt like you were living your freedom. when you were self-sabotaging. But beyond that, physically being ill every single day, it didn't matter what, for most of my time rough sleeping, I was actually, I wouldn't say lucky, but I was out in relatively good weather. You know, I didn't get caught in the rain too much. But even then, just being constantly on my feet because I didn't tap, wandering about with no support network or structure to my life. I was just physically exhausted day to day. I had mental health issues that weren't being seen to. I had so many physical problems that I just wasn't getting, that I wasn't paying attention to because I didn't feel myself worthy of self-care, and I didn't want to interact with GPs. I didn't want to interact with society that in any way because they rejected me already. It was the way that I felt. It was only through small individual actions, in fact, the actions of one individual person in particular, that meant that I managed to break that cycle, because there was somebody that was willing to give me a job despite my appearance, that was willing to put me up in his house even though he barely knew me, that saw something in me somehow, I don't know, and was giving enough to help out. And I felt like I could trust an individual person, but I couldn't trust an organization. You know, I'd been let down by those, you know, quite a lot. As you know, in total I was homeless for about a year and a half, you know. I'd say about a third of that was rough sleeping, the rest of that in emergency accommodations. And, you know, I even completed the cycle and got put into a council house at one point, and I ended up jeopardizing it because I didn't know how to keep it. I showed up to my council house, and in the interim, they'd put me in emergency accommodation because of my at-risk status. They put me into bed and breakfasts at a reduced rate that I guess I wasn't smart enough to ask, but I assumed was going to be paid for by my benefits and by the people that were supporting me. And it wasn't. And I arrive at my house, it's the first day, and there's already a letter for me, and it's my bill for all of these places. There's what I'm going to be owed and what's going to be taken out of my benefits. And, you know, that's not the way that the system necessarily operates now, but there are still loads of ways in which people can get kind of trapped in this, and they think, I'm too overwhelmed, fuck it, I'm going, you know. And, I just knew I wasn't going to be, I felt like I wasn't going to be able to help keep that down, and I didn't. Yeah, I couldn't reach out at that point. I hadn't built the coping mechanisms. I barely knew myself as a human being. I wasn't able to ask for the help of others because I didn't know what was best for myself. You know.
What would you say are some of the reasons that people are facing homelessness?
Well, there's a myriad of different reasons why somebody might find themselves homeless, but there is two big ones that are making it that there are more and more homeless people. And that's the rising cost of rent in line with people's pay. People aren't able to afford their houses, even, you know, young people who have been working most of their lives. And on top of that, we've had a government that has systematically cut benefits, cut everything from the lower class. We've seen a government that has absolutely placed the higher income as priority, and has furthered this divide within the class. We see constantly this rollout of universal credit damaging absolutely everybody that it touches. I don't know a single person that I've dealt with, and in my line, almost everybody I deal with is on benefits to some degree. You know, there's some people that we are seeing the near end of, that we're getting into training and employment, and that's great. And we do see that quite a bit. But I don't know a single person who's been positively affected by the rollout of universal credit. And that's really making it struggle for us to find houses that are affordable for people to put in. We can put people in supported or sheltered accommodation, you know, as a way of sweeping this issue under the rug. There are some people that are going to need to be in supported and shared accommodation, you know, for the majority of their lives. You know, absolutely, they need that. But time and time again, we're not seeing adequate housing made or provided for people who need that, you know, that private rented accommodation option. Like, there's no place that I've housed anybody in that hasn't required some top up from their benefits. You know, we're not putting people into five-star accommodation. We're putting people into, you know, shared houses, often with strangers. You know, we're putting people into, you know, studio flats that, I'll be frank, aren't the best. But everybody needs to have a base where they can, you know, keep everything else in order from. They need that solid security of having just a roof over your head, so that everything else, say if you have mental health issues or physical issues, or if you have you know, no employment, or if you have no education, as long if you have a house, you're able to be able to focus on those things. But when you have no place to be in your accommodation, even if you do have a roof over your head, if your accommodation is a shared floor space with a load of other people, that is going to be on your mind 24/7. And that's going to make it really difficult for you to even want to try to engage in things that you think are doomed to fail. Because when you're in such a hopeless situation and things fail again and again and again and again, you don't see any future. You're at the bottom of a hole with no hope of horizon. And it's difficult to get the motivation to these guys, you know. And I don't blame them. I don't blame a single one.
Paul, this is Harry. Harry, just Hi. Paul, could you just tell Paul what you're doing? No, Paul, just briefly introduce yourself.
Hi, coming back. Nice to meet you. I'm Harry. Nice to meet you. I'm doing a documentary about rough sleeping in Cardiff.
I wanted to speak to someone who was facing a situation like what Thomas is describing. So I was contacted by a man on Twitter who lives on the streets in Cardiff. We spent a day together out in the city centre with several members of the homeless community. That day, I met Paul. I'd seen him before, but this was the first time we spoke. I sat down with him, and he kindly agreed to talk about his experience sleeping rough.
Yeah. Well, I've been on the streets for 9 years. Huh?
9 years? Yeah. Are you from Cardiff originally?
No, from Bridgend.
Bridgend. What's it like in Cardiff?
It's good. It's better than Bridgend for food and everything else, and more help. Like, I haven't been up in Bridgend for a long while, so I use a little bit more help. That's all we used to do up in Bridgend, is have a breakfast and that's it. Yes. And it'll be like a wallage place from 9 till 12. We'll have to have washing clothes, yeah, and have a cup of tea and biscuits. Yeah. And,
Paul is referring to the wallage, a homeless charity who have a number of outreach projects to help rough sleepers, including breakfast runs and providing shelter, as well as prevention and other forms of support. He tells me in the capital there are more services for rough sleepers compared to a smaller town such as Bridgend.
Can I ask, do you feel safe on the streets in Cardiff?
I'm safer out on the street than down in some of the hostels.
And do you ever get any support from the police?
Yeah, sometimes we do, yeah. But mostly they do pick on us, like.
How so?
Yeah, they do. They just, like, see, basically, they, you know, sometimes, say I'm here, you know, and I'm sleeping, they think I'm begging, and I'm going to be begging when I'm sleeping. Yeah? And they wake me up, like, have a moment, and sometimes, like, I've been arrested for it, like. Yeah. It's beyond me.
This is a common complaint amongst this community, being targeted and alleged discrimination from the police. Paul explains in his view that if a fight breaks out, say on a Saturday night, with a drunk clubgoer and a homeless person, the police may point the finger in one direction only.
You know what I mean? There's people out there out to fight. Yeah. You know what I mean? You've got to stay right there, it's out there. Right there, and they get drunk. Who do they pick on us? Yeah? So we end up, if we end up fighting with them, who's going to go to prison? Us. Yeah?
Paul tells me about another rough sleeper, his friend Ginger, who this week has received some good news from the council.
They say we'd be like me and my friend Ginger. He's had good news now. He's viewing a flat after 13 years tomorrow. Yeah? And, you know, 13 years is a long time. You know, he'd had a flat with misses and all that. And, you know, but on and off, 13 years, you're on the street now, me and 9 years. It's a long time. Like I said, I'd rather sleep out on the street and go to the centre. That is the worst.
9 years is a long time to be on the streets. But he explains how he'd rather be on the street than go to some of these homeless shelters, alleging that personal belongings, such as shoes, could be stolen.
Because they'll rob you and train us off your feet.
Yeah. Do you get any support from any companies, any charities in Cardiff?
Yes, they come from the Valleys, and you've got a guy, Andy Webb, and he is the best. He come out tonight at 12 o'clock for the music, and he will. He give a jack potato, beans and cheese, he'll give a chocolate, he'll give an ham roll, he'll give pasty, he'll give soup, coffee, tea.
Do you ever get any abuse from members of the public?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
They say, oh, you tramp, get a job. And I said, look, I've worked most of my life. Yeah. I said, look, I paid enough taxes in this world. Yeah. And I said, look, who are you to judge me? Because I'm on the street. Yeah, you can have what you overnight. Like a click of a switch. Yeah. And they say, I've seen people urinating over. Yeah, boys sleeping in this doorway, honestly. And a member of the public drunk. I'm pissing, actually urinating over them.
As shocking as this sounds, it doesn't surprise me. I've seen the verbal abuse of homeless people in town, and I've read articles about acts of violence aimed at people sleeping on the streets in Cardiff. At that moment, Paul's friend Ginger approaches, and we talk more about his new housing. What strikes me here is Paul talking about the power of their friendship. They've been friends for many years, both living on the streets. Paul will be staying with Ginger once he gets the keys to his house, so that he too has a roof over his head until he gets his own place.
Ginger, come here. Tell him about you, only 13 years and he's signing the thing.
I'm signing for keys tomorrow after 13 years.
That's really good. That's really good news.
And I met this man 9 years ago on the street.
Nine years, best friend now.
So.
So you've been 13 years on the streets and you're getting a house tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's really good.
What's the company called to help us?
First Housing.
Since they came January last year, it is much more help. If it wasn't for them, he won't be signing, looking at a property tomorrow.
That's really good. So, and are you looking for a property as well?
Yeah. I've done all the forms, everything. I might be in March, April.
Obviously, because my best friend needs me coming in with me tomorrow.
I'm going to stay and live with him, yeah, so I'd be off asleep as well. You know what I mean? I only stay with him 3 nights a week by law. You know what I mean? But, they know I'm going to stay there because we're best friends. And, you know what I mean? We go up the same appointments together, we've got the same key worker. You know what I mean? So, we are getting help. Like, if it wasn't for that key worker and his first housing, we'd be still waiting.
Both are grateful for the support they received and remain positive despite the struggle, the long waits, and the abuse they received. Paul goes on to tell me how only 3 weeks before this talk, he was gravely unwell and thought he was going to lose his life.
I was dying in a tent not long ago. And if I could say, I was in a tent, basically, and I probably was seen it turn into pneumonia, and the outreach team, supposed to help us, and left me there on my back when I was vomiting. Yeah, and if it wasn't for him, they didn't even put me in a recovery station, nothing. Yeah, if it wasn't a party, there we go. He put me in, he prayed to God twice, don't let this man die in here, he didn't deserve it. He put me in a recovery station, and then the ambulance was called, and I was at the hospital, and pneumonia, and someone gave me spice.
Spice.
Yeah, when I was dying, when I was basically on my back, vomiting, there's someone come in my tent and actually give me spice, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know who he was giving it to me, yeah?
So someone gave you spice?
That's what made me mobile then. That's what made me sick, and more sick.
So you almost died?
Yeah.
After you got out of hospital, were you straight back here?
Yeah.
Spice is another name for synthetic cannabis, a known legal high. It's unregulated and can have horrific side effects. While Paul was unconscious in a tent, someone put spice in his mouth, worsening his condition and causing him to vomit. Both could have killed him. After Paul recovered, with no address, he was returned to the streets.
Thanks very much. Yeah, all the best.
But thankfully he lived to tell the tale. Spice and other drugs are becoming a big problem in the homeless community. I discussed this with Thomas.
Spice is the big one.
Tell me about spice.
I first heard about spice quite a while ago when I was probably about 15 or 16. and I tried it back then. It was a over-the-counter synthetic cannabinoids, and you know, for a rebellious 15-year-old who wants to smoke weed but doesn't know any dealers, that was what I got. And back then it was just this horrible tasting thing that made you feel quite sleepy. Now what has happened is that this substance has been banned time and time again because it's essentially a load of chemicals that are sprayed on top of plant matter, and the plant matter isn't illegal. The chemicals can be changed slightly every single time, so they can try and ban a particular substance, but then they'll just come up with a different version of it, slightly different, change one chain in it. And because of that, it's leapfrogged from what I knew when I was, you know, young and stupid as being, you know, a marijuana alternative for people who can't get it. What it is now is a completely different beast. It doesn't have the same marijuana-like effects that it had before. It is incredibly strong. And you've probably seen yourself around Cardiff. There are often people who are in an absolutely zombified state because the chemicals are sprayed on top. The end of a bag could be far, far stronger, for example, than the start of a bag, the very same bag. So it's a completely unpredictable drug as well. And because of that, you could have somebody who's been smoking that stuff for ages and has been fine, and then they take it one time and they have a fit. And that's something that we see, and that's something I've had to deal with personally, is having somebody in a shelter who has taken this and has had essentially like an epileptic fit reaction, and their heart races. And you know, we see people with the resting heart rate of runners when they're just lying down and they don't know what to do. It puts people into cardiac arrest. They go back to the drug time and time again because, you know, it's addictive. It takes them out of where they are at the moment. Heroin used to be quite a large problem. Now we're seeing so many less people use it because spice is incredibly cheap. You know, for those who don't know what it smells, I mean, if you've ever smelt spice, like in an enclosed environment particularly, you'll know when you smell it again. It's this horrible acrid thing that it really clings to the back of your throat. And when working in shelters where people have been smoking it, if I was in an enclosed room, and I swear this isn't hyperbole, you get a headache from being in the same room that somebody has smoked spice in, maybe, you know, 10 minutes before. If I, you know, and it's like 30 seconds, I'm in that room, and then bang, I've got a headache, and it's hot. It just cuts through you. The withdrawal symptoms take 6 weeks physically. So the physical withdrawal from spice, I mean, obviously it varies from person to person, but that is 6 weeks where one of the symptoms would be vomiting while you sleep, which is obviously, you know, that's incredibly dangerous. You've got shaking, you've got vomiting, you've got, it feels horrific. It's a horrific pain that none of these guys want to go through. I think most people aren't ignorant to how hard it is to kick a drug like heroin. That has with a physical withdrawal mind. Obviously, the mental effects are different and everybody's affected differently with that. But the physical withdrawal from heroin is between 2 to 5 days. It's such a radical change in how you cure, how you get this drug out of a person. Because you have to have somebody who is going through a horrific time, who is at their lowest, who is probably taking this drug to escape from, because I don't know anybody who's taking it because they love the recreational value. You know, for the most part, it's because it's the escape from where they are. And then you're asking them to do 6 weeks of torturous pain in order to get away from that. You know, it's incredibly tough to kick. And I suppose the twisted upside to this is that we are seeing less people who are heroin users, who are crack users, because this is just very all-encompassing. It's just so cheap and it's available everywhere. And you know, the rumor, the hearsay at the moment is that now, whereas previously they'd be kind of sold under the counter in the same way that sort of like, you know, you'd buy your budget tobacco on Clifton Street or something, now we're hearing, again, it's conjecture, but we're hearing that we have gangs that are in Cardiff that are now controlling the usage of spice. We've seen people being assaulted over these kind of drugs and stuff like that. Whether it's because of the people who are dealing them, we don't know. the other day I saw somebody outside a shop by my house sitting down on the floor. He's got a bit of change in his hand and he's very spiced up, so you can barely see what's going around him. I see a guy come up to him and I can't remember what car, it was a nice car, pop out and go, "Hey, what you got in your hand? What you got in your hand?" And the guy's barely moving. He's looking what he's managed to beg. And he's like, yeah, all right, I'll take that. And gives him a little bit, you know? So we are clearly seeing, you know, I'm not saying organized crime levels of gang, but we're seeing people who are exploiting the homeless now in order to keep them on it and in order to squeeze them for what they got left.
My producer Tanya and I wanted to find these gangs or sellers of spice. So we went out to investigate to a street in Cardiff which has a reputation for being a hotspot for legal highs amongst other drugs.
We're just wondering about the use of legal highs in this area. If you know anything about it or you've heard any rumours.
No idea, and they actually live around the corner.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Have you ever heard of spice that people smoke?
No, I just actually seen on the internet only. Yeah. And I'm not from here. Anyway, so...
That's right. Well, we're just wondering.
Okay, yeah, we just heard some rumours and we want to...
Yeah.
See what's up.
No idea, man, actually.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks for
your
help.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, in our request, we're journalists from the Cardiff City Centre.
Okay.
We've heard some rumours about legal highs being sold in the area. We kind of just want to see if anyone else has heard any rumours. No?
Have you ever heard of spikes before that people smoke?
I've heard of it, but I don't know where to get it.
Yeah.
Are you aware that people sell it around here?
I don't know.
No. Okay. Thank you so much.
Sorry for your time.
No problem. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Thanks. Hi, Steve. Is that your cheesecake
before? Yeah. Steve, Gavin,
We're journalists from Cardiff City Centre, and we're out kind of investigating some rumours about spice being sold in this area, or like legal highs and things like that. We're wondering if you've ever heard any rumours or anything like that.
Thank you so much.
I feel like they just don't want to talk, do they?
No, and like clearly certain people have heard. It's like that lady in TSB seems so much like she wanted to, like, oh yes, I've heard this, you know, but just like they're scared of something, aren't they? Because, you know. So what can you do?
But nothing prevailed. Everyone we spoke to, both on and off the microphone, had no idea, or just didn't want to talk to us.
I've honestly, I've never seen anything like the spice epidemic the way it is now. It's just torn a massive hole through the homeless community, and it is a community. I think that's something people don't understand, is that it's not just a group of people who are under horrible circumstances that you wouldn't want to be under. Because we've made people feel like they're outside of society, you're going to have these guys band together. Look, some of these guys don't like each other. Some of these guys, have altercations, but they know each other, and one way or another, they keep themselves informed because they have to in order to survive. And when you have something deal a blow like this, it's something that affects so many of these guys, and it keeps them entrenched. Because you have to treat the addiction before you can ever think about getting that person back into housing. Whereas before, we could put somebody who was a heroin user, we could put them in a hostel that allowed them to use, and we could work on the issue while they're in a safe place so that they're not going around the corner. You know, they're not told by their hostel, oh, you can't use here. So they go around the corner and shoot up, you know, in an alleyway with alley water, you know. With spice, because it affects everybody so massively different, and because it's so powerful, so cheap, and so ubiquitous, we don't know how to do it. It changes all the time, and we don't know what the best way of rehabilitating somebody with a spice issue is. You know, we haven't figured that out yet at all.
There was another question I wanted to ask Thomas, but I couldn't quite find the words.
I think my third question is going to be about misconceptions. So I guess the main question is, how should members of the public interact, and how should they be with homeless people? That's a really bad way of wording it, but how should people
No. It's an honest way of wording it, because people don't know how they should feel, you know. And I think the main reason is that people are scared of admitting the problem. The main reason I think that people walk past somebody who's homeless on the street is because if they stop and think about it, frankly, it would bum them out. And that's sad, but that's the truth. People will ignore it because you stop and think about what that person has to go through in that day. And you can't continue your day in the same way, knowing that while you're at work, somebody's outside in the freezing rain. While that you're eating your food, somebody's going hungry. It will play on your mind if you're an empathetic person. And that's why people but feel like they have to ignore it. And then the second stage of that is not ignoring it, but trying to justify it. People saying, that person's on drugs or alcohol. They've done this to themselves, which is a reprehensible way of thinking, because anybody who has those issues needs more help, more assistance. And I think the first thing to do is to acknowledge that there is a problem, and also to acknowledge those people that you do see while you're out and about. And look, I'm not saying that every one of your interactions is going to be sterling. These people, you know, a lot of homeless people have a lot of issues that aren't going to make them the most sociable people that you want to hang around with. But that doesn't mean that they don't deserve help in the same way. And they definitely deserve the acknowledgement of themselves as a human being with dignity. And just simply saying, oh, I'm sorry, mate, I don't have anything, have a nice day, is actually kind of a large step up from the way that the majority of people do treat the homeless. You know, that acknowledgement of somebody's dignity is huge. It really matters. In a lot of ways, homeless people are being completely ignored. We're seeing time and time again that the problem's getting worse, and nobody seems to be addressing it. And I do get this quite a lot, actually. I do get people asking me, should I give my money? Should that guy might spend it on drugs. Should I buy him food instead? Should I do this? Should I do that? And I always say the same thing. It's absolutely down to the person and what they want to do. But if they do want to help, then the best way to do it is to give their time. The best way to do it is to find any voluntary services nearby. And for example, you know, in Cardiff, we've got Salvation Army, we've got the Wallach, we've got places like the Dusty Forge. There is Cate's Community Centre, which might not deal directly with homelessness, but does actually provide quite a great service for people who are rough sleeping. There is a load of different voluntary opportunities out there in order to help. And I think, you know, if you want to, you can find those places. You know, there is something that will suit your time schedule. There is something that will suit your skills and abilities. And there are ways that you can give back.
This brings me to the main event. To raise awareness for rough sleeping and to raise money for the charities that help them, Cardiff University Students' Union puts on an event called the Student Sleep Out. It's exactly as described. Students sleep out in sleeping bags on the street outside the Union building for one night. I went there in November to see for myself and talk to the students taking part. I wanted to ask why they felt inspired to join the project and how they saw the homeless situation in Cardiff.
For the listeners, can you describe what tonight is?
So everyone's come to the SU and are sleeping in the cold on cardboard mats with sleeping bags to just raise awareness of the problem that there is here.
Can you describe the temperature for me?
I think it's about 0 degrees. I think it's meant to hit -1 tonight, so...
And you're wearing a lot of layers.
I'm wearing a lot of layers.
Got a sleeping bag.
And a sleeping bag.
What is your first reaction if you're out on a night like tonight, or even cold, and you're walking through Cardiff? What is your reaction if you see a rough sleeper?
It's just really upsetting. I don't know what to do, because often you're told don't give them money, but then I don't know how else to help them a lot of the time, and I feel very helpless.
Yeah, I feel like this is good as well, because I feel like normally during the, like, I don't... Like, you see them on the street and can't do anything for them. Don't really know what you can do to help. So, yeah.
I think it's important to acknowledge that, like, for us people that aren't, like, homeless, we don't experience it firsthand. Like, it's quite scary to see. Like, when I'm walking home from a night out, like, I look at a homeless person that I sometimes, depending on who it is, I sometimes feel scared. And I think doing things like this is important to, like, combat that mindset and really change people's minds that it's not a scary thing and it's something that needs to be helped. like when you see people in night out, they often ask for change. I always got told buy them a hot drink or something instead. But also at the moment, like, no one carries change anymore, so like actually trying to help them is so much more difficult because everything's done by card.
Yeah, and also like when people tell you like don't give them change, it's kind of like it's a bit of a weird thing because they're saying, oh, don't give them change, they might go out and buy drugs, and it's like, which is such a misconception. And also like if you're actively giving someone money, they should be given the choice to do whatever they want with that money, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I'm from Birmingham, there's quite a homeless problem as well, but going through Cardiff just makes me really upset because I feel like most people just ignore them and they don't recognise them as people, they just see them as an annoyance. And I actually want to help them, but I can't just help people by like walking down the street and just giving money everywhere. Like, I don't have the money to help them all because it's such a big problem here. So I actually want to contribute to make their lives feel better, because I've had quite a privileged life and not having to live on the streets. So I want to make other people's lives better.
If they can do all year round, like, we should be able to do one night.
Yeah. It's quite important, I think, to like acknowledge the fact that we are like so privileged, and the fact that we're choosing to do it, where so many people don't get to choose that they sleep out on the street. So I think that's quite important as well to acknowledge.
So last year it snowed in March, so it's really cold. We're expecting a colder winter this year. How does that make you feel about the welfare of rough sleepers?
Well, I think after experiencing tonight, and like it's the start of winter, and I know we're all going to be freezing in the middle of the night, we're going to really like appreciate how much like struggle people go through when they have to sleep on the street at night. And I think it's going to make me really like look twice towards like people when they're out in the winter.
Yeah, and especially given the fact that we're all sat here with like so many layers. We've got hats, we've got gloves, we've got like two pairs of gloves, we've got pillows, we've got sleeping bags. Yeah, we can go inside and get hot drinks and go to the toilet, whereas that option is not available to so many people across the UK. So
I don't know if there's a lot being done.
I don't think there's a lot being done about it. Money.
Is it going to get better?
Anytime soon, unless some serious action is going to be taking place, I don't think it's going to any serious changes happening on our doorstep.
Thank you.
The temperature was plummeting, but everyone seemed in very high spirits.
Cold. It's going to be very, very cold.
Yeah. It's nice to have everyone here. Like, it's a good atmosphere.
And it's nice to get to know new people that you would never meet outside of this situation, and like-minded people as well.
Yeah.
I think at the moment it's really like upbeat, and like we're all ready to face it. I don't know how we'll be feeling at like 4 in the morning,
yeah.
But at the moment, it's quite like...
I'm already cold, like, got all my layers on, and we're an hour in and I'm cold, and this is the hottest part of the night, so, yeah.
Okay. One of the organisers had prepared a quiz as a way of entertaining everyone. The first round was all about homelessness statistics. I stayed with one of the groups and joined in.
Okay, question two. In tens of thousands, okay, how many young people seek help because they are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless each year?
Like 110,000.
As of November 2018, this number was 100,000 young people facing homelessness in the UK.
Okay, question three. What do you think is the most common cause of young people becoming homeless? So what's the most common cause of young people?
I think it's family, for young people.
What kind of age are we talking of young people, though?
Around our age? Some of the major causes of youth homelessness include family breakdown, physical and mental health, exclusion from school, leaving care, and refugees and gang crime victims. A volunteer who was in this group had only recently moved to Cardiff from France. I wanted to get his insights on the homeless scene compared to a city overseas.
You've seen Cardiff for 2 months,
yeah.
You've started studying here.
Okay.
What is the problem question like four. Back home compared to here?
There's way less homeless people. You don't notice them. Like, if you look for them, you might find them. But I think in Cardiff, that's one of the first things you see when you're at night in the city. There's people sleeping everywhere. So I think there's a real problem.
After the quiz, I sat down with a group of four girls. They'd all just moved to Cardiff to study. We had a very in-depth conversation about their perceptions of the homeless and their hopes for a solution to this crisis.
So I am here with...
Jessica. Kira, Georgia, Katie.
What inspired you guys to take part in tonight?
Seeing all the homeless people at Cardiff, like when I came to uni, I was really shocked. And then I saw that it was on and I had no reason to say no. And so I thought, well, like it's kind of like something I can do, I guess.
There's a lot more homeless people in Cardiff than I'm used to. So having seen all of them, I was like, okay, I need to try and help in some way. So this was like the best opportunity I had so far.
I don't think homelessness is very talked about that often, and I think it's really done about it. So this is a good opportunity to raise awareness.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised when I came here also to see like how many people were living on the streets.
How long have you all been in Cardiff for?
Is it like 5 weeks? Six weeks?
Is that for all of you?
Yeah. Six weeks.
How does this compare to where you come from?
I'm from Chumagna, which is just outside of Bristol. And there's, like, I've never seen a homeless person in Chumagna. So, like, coming here was a big surprise. Like.
I'm from a small town, like, just outside of London. It is really small, but there's a lot of homeless people. Like, we have a homeless shelter, and there's like people that don't get into it because there's so many trying to get in. You see more homeless people in Cardiff than you do where I'm from, but I think there's more in Cardiff that's trying to help. Like, even this is of raising awareness for it. Like, I've seen more, like, not advertisement, but campaigns and trying to help them.
Yeah, I'm from a small town in Mullingar, in Ireland, and I think there's a pretty good system for the homelessness in really in Ireland. So it would be kind of rare to see someone on the street. So it's really different for me coming here and seeing so many people that don't have a house or a home to live.
What do you hope to achieve from tonight?
I hope to achieve
the Bank of Heroes.
A better understanding of what it is actually like. Because I always walk past a homeless person and think, oh my gosh, it looks awful, like, it must be awful kind of thing. But I hope now I actually understand a little bit more what it is like.
I think it gives you more awareness of like what they are actually going through. Because like you see them in the day sitting there, but like actually at night it gets even colder and stuff. You never really see that. Like,
when you guys are out and about in Cardiff and you see a rough sleeper, what is your first instinct?
To like show them that I have noticed them, because I know that like it must be really demoralising for people to walk past and pretend they haven't seen them, to like, so either to even smile or something like that. And if I have got the time, to try and ask if I could get them like a drink or something to eat.
Yeah, really just, you know, try and see if I could help them out, buy them a drink or something, or even like gloves or anything if they need to cover up, and just, yeah, even spare change if I have anything on me. So, yeah.
I think like in the months and seasons where it's like this sort of weather, in the winter seasons, there should always be a place for them to go and shelter, whether there's even food or no food, just anywhere for them just to have warmth.
Something like this.
Just something. Or just like extra layers for them being provided.
Do you think change is coming?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I actually think so.
Yeah, I think it'll be a while, but like, I think there's like signs of it.
Yeah. I think like campaigns are steadily increasing and more people becoming aware of the issue that there is.
Even like in schools and stuff, you're getting more and more recognition about it.
And like the stereotypes kind of, I think, now starting to go away, and people understand the actual situations of individuals.
There was even a bus, you know, when we were walking, there was like this big bus stand that was like serving dinner to like homeless people on the street. So I really think, you know, they're starting to take action now and take the...
Here, Jessica is referring to the Salvation Army bus. It's a double-decker bus converted into a mobile cafe. It stops outside the city hall multiple nights a week and serves free hot food and drinks to people sleeping rough. It's a very popular service, as many rely on it as their only source of a hot meal.
It's very cold. Thank you for the blanket, by the way. So I'm going to leave now. I'm going to come back at 6 in the morning.
And, we might not be this energetic.
Just very happy right now.
We'll debrief. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
absolutely freezing. Let's see how cold it actually is.
It was -1 when I got in the car. Easily the coldest night we'd had so far that year. I felt so inspired by all the students after hearing them talk so empathetically about a problem some had only witnessed for a few months. It really struck me that many were first-year students and had been inspired so soon to partake due to the sheer number and visibility of the Rough Sleepers in Cardiff.
But they're brave. It's freezing. We had a guy from France, we had a girl from Ireland, and they're saying that the problem is worse here, which is fascinating.
I headed back home, feeling rather guilty that I wasn't sleeping outside with them. I set my alarm for 5 a.m. so that I could be there to see how the night went. Next time, in part 2 of Think Tank Investigates.
I'm okay because I can go get warm, go get something to eat, go home, have a shower, do you know what I mean? But if I couldn't do that, oh my God, I'd be so miserable this morning.
You know, because somebody has a substance misuse issue, because somebody is a heroin user and they can't get themselves up to get into the warmth, that's their own doing, you know, try heroin and see if you can kick it the next day. You know what I mean? It's try having nothing and having heroin and kicking it the next day. These people need more assistance.
You know, let's be honest about it. If I had to live like that, I might be on drugs and alcohol. You know what I mean? It takes away the pain. It's like, I suppose, like self-harming. You know, people turn to things because I suppose it's hope, really.
Various criminal activity, so we have people involved in county lines who are deliberately targeting vulnerable homeless people, rough sleepers, to become engaged in their drug running across county lines right through to Pembrokeshire.
Part 1 of Think Tank Investigates was presented and produced by me, with music and sound by Rowan Lees, and additional production from Tanya Harrington. You can catch up with previous episodes of Think Tank the Podcast, featuring ordinary people's extraordinary life stories.
It was really difficult. I was travelling from London to Cardiff every weekend and seeing him in hospital. And seeing someone that short of breath, it's seeing someone struggle every day to do things like brush their teeth, be able to get out of bed, walk upstairs. It's very difficult to watch. And being in an environment where everyone close to you is dying, as you can imagine, would wear you down and make you, I don't know, question things and naturally quite depressed. So it reached a point in hospital where they couldn't do anything any further.
Listen back to Series 1 and 2 of Think Tank the Podcast anytime, anywhere on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio Public, or wherever you get your podcasts. This series is proud to be part of the Think Tank family. Find out more about this and other original shows at our new website, thinktank.fm.